If you ask the best in the world the single greatest secret to success, they'll smile and give a gentle laugh. You're asking the wrong question. Being extraordinary is not a single element. It cannot be distilled down to one thing. We're told that being a success is a magical thing that happens in a place you'll arrive. The hard part is that this long-held truth is the biggest lie. Extraordinary features humans that have reached the top of their field and become extraordinary humans. The door to being extraordinary is now open. Will you walk in? So I'm super excited for our guest on the Create Your Own Life podcast today. We have actually one of my favorite musicians with us. Welcome to the Create Your Own Life podcast, Modest Yahoo.
What's up?
It is awesome to have you on the today on the show today, man. And I want to kind of start first off with what got you started in music? Like, where did it begin for you?
It's funny because I'm right now doing this from a town where I started making music. I'm in Bend, Oregon. I live in New York, but I have a daughter out here, and I had a couple shows in the Northwest, so I came to spend some time. And this is, like, actually the town where I really got started doing music. I was out here in a program for sort of troubled youth. I went on, like, a wilderness treatment program when I was 17 and ended up in a year-long program here in Bend and loved music, was into, like, performing as a kid in, like, musicals and chorus and plays and stuff like that. And I loved music. I had a passion for music. I dropped out of high school and followed Phish around the country when I was a senior in high school. And when I came here, like that spring that I was 17 years old, it was the spring of 97. There was a coffee shop that had like an open mic night, and I met a guy in town, and we used to just come and play, and then we got our own night, and then I set up a band, and then I started playing shows in the Northwest. And then I moved back to New York, and I went to college at the New School, and just really didn't really have a band. I'd go to, like, open mic night at the New Eureka Poets Cafe on the Lower East Side, and spent a lot of time just alone listening to music and writing lyrics and practicing. I had, like, a little PA system and a drum set, and I would just kind of, like, get into the creative zone in my room. And I became religious and just really, like, stopped doing music altogether and had met a couple of guys that went to NYU Music Business School that knew me before I was religious and knew that I was kind of, like, I would sit in with different bands, and I knew a lot of the musicians at the jazz school and at the New School. And they had gotten a grant to start a record company to promote Jewish music, whatever that means.
Right.
And I was probably like the most Jewish thing there was. And they knew me, they knew my music, so they wanted to start booking shows for me. And I would ride the subway with my like Gemara, like the Torah, you know, and I'd take my glasses off when I got to the gig, so I wouldn't see, like, any girls or billboards of women. I was super-duper religious, and I would just literally, like, walk onto stage and do my thing with musicians that I was friends with from college. And then I would go right back to the yeshiva, you know, and I was living there, and I was there for about 2 years, and then everything kind of just took off for me. They got me on a couple of late-night shows, and that was that. I signed a record deal. I went on tour, and I've been doing it ever since.
Totally. And you mentioned, you know, how you got super religious. What was really, I guess, the point that caused that to happen for you?
Well, I was struggling. Like, I always was like, in, you know, since the time I was a young kid, you know, I was messing around with drugs, and I was trying to be sober, but I was struggling with it, and I was pretty lonely. I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't have a girlfriend. I was like, I knew I wanted to do music, and I felt this connection to God, and I was had those experiences, like at those Phish shows on LSD. So I had a whole spiritual take on the world, and I had been to Jerusalem when I was 16, so I felt a connection to being Jewish, and I just really wanted a path. I wanted to really like be told, like, I wanted to become something else. I wanted to, like, I was sick of myself, and I wanted to become this other version of myself that was super disciplined and spiritual and connected with God. And I figured, like, okay, well, you know, I felt a certain like feeling towards Judaism, and I had some interaction with Hasidim, and I felt like, well, that would be kind of cool. And then I met all these guys that were once deadheads, had become like Chabad rabbis, and I was like, well, this isn't so far away, like maybe this is actually could happen. And I sort of ended up just moving to Crown Heights and moving into a yeshiva.
And we have a listener question from Mr. Preneur, Sam Anderson. And Sam wants to know, was it difficult for you being somebody that was very religious to break into the mainstream?
Actually, it was like the contrary, because I was like totally like anti-establishment. Like, I don't care about fashion or looks or record deals or any of that. I'm just going to study Torah and make music, and God is going to make it happen for me if that's what I'm supposed to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I totally came about it that way, and then that's actually what happened. Like, that's literally, I literally, like, was in yeshiva and getting calls, like, we want you to come play here, we want you to come do this thing and that thing. And once I started doing it, it was, like, the attention that I got because I was Hasidic, and I had that whole look, and I was living that life, it really... It drew like this fascination towards like, how is this guy making this music? And so really at first it was super helpful because it helped separate me and made it interesting to people. The struggle became like later on, as I've sort of continued to create music, there's, you know, a fan base that I've built that like really is connected to the music that I make. But then there's, like, the majority of people that just remember that, oh, yeah, there was this Hasidic reggae singer.
Right.
And they're like, you know what I mean? So for those people, it's kind of like, oh, you still make music? Like, you know, like, what, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, so it's been more of a struggle for me to, like, to on the back end of it than it was at first, you know?
Right. And when Spark Seeker came out, which, by the way, is my favorite album that you've done, there was a really big change in how you presented yourself. What really changed that for you, and has it changed the way you practice Judaism?
Well, yeah, I guess in, you know, throughout the like 10 years, I was living in Crown Heights, and then I started touring, and I was super religious while I was touring. And then eventually, you know, I started to kind of expand a little bit and mature a little bit. And I started to feel like a little more connected with myself and some of the initial reasons why I think I became religious. I started to find solutions for those outside of being religious. And I started to basically decide to kind of like take my life back into my own hands. And one day it just dawned on me, like, it's my life, you know, and I can change, I can be whoever I want to be. Just like I chose to be religious, I can choose to shave my beard and to be, you know, just be myself. I don't need to have this whole persona of who I am.
Right. And what was the reaction to your fan base personally to that for you?
Well, there was like a mixed reaction, you know, and it was like there were a lot of people that were like, how could you do that? Like, you are that guy. Now, like, we don't, like, if you're not him, then who are you? And, like, why should we care? And my response to that was like, well, you know, if you only cared about who I was because of my persona,
right,
then you missed the whole, like, you missed the whole boat, you know, because the whole point was like, don't judge a book by its cover. It was like, that you don't know, you know, it's not about the way you look, it's about what's on the inside. And it's always for me been about my music, and the fact that I was religious and Hasidic,
totally,
that might have been interesting to people, but that's never what it was to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
it was from the inside out, you know. So, you know, so that's kind of like I went through a sort of realization at that point that, you know, I have almost to like cultivate my fan base and figure out, like, just obviously just do me and do what's important to me, and the people that come along for the ride come along, and those that, you know, were like fringe fans or whatever,
and
like, you know,
going back to your music, where people, have you, you in know, terms of artists, where have you pulled your major inspiration from? You know, what's kind of been the artists that have helped to develop your sound for you?
Well, it's kind of like continuously changing, because I'm old, like, still listening to music and new music. So, and I'm influenced by a lot of music. But initially, Phish was a big one for me. Mm-hmm. Even though my music is different than their music, the whole improvisational approach to making live music was huge for me, and that was really where I decided that I wanted to do music at those shows, because it was like the experience, the live music experience of not going to see a show or a performer, but actually going for like a religious or a spiritual experience where you enter into this world of music, and in that place is where you discover yourself and express yourself and experience different emotions, different feelings and ideas and community. And I guess that was like, that's the main thing I've taken from Phish, is like the idea of making improvisational music, of treating music in that way, where it's like, it's never about just playing the songs for me. It's about having, you know, a musical experience with a band. And then Bob Marley, you know, was like a huge influence on me. That's really where I discovered reggae music, and where I actually like discovered my interest in the Old Testament and how Judaism is relevant to all that. And then I started listening to, like, there was an artist named Sizzla that was like the first like dance hall artist that really combined the like reggae music with the Old Testament consciousness and the hip hop kind of flavor that we grew up with. So those are like, I would point to. And then there were like singer-songwriters I grew up listening to, like Tracy Chapman, Ricky Lee Jones. And now I guess the most influence I've had from an artist is like Frank Ocean. Like, I'm listening to that new record a lot. Popcon is a reggae artist that I really have been inspired by recently, and Vince Staples is a rapper that I've been really inspired by. So those would be like
totally. And at your shows, you know, the couple I've been to, there's a lot of improvisation with what you guys are doing. So what is your writing process really like? Because, you know, there's a lot to the actual performance of it, but what goes into creating it?
Well, it's different. Like, there's different aspects to it. There's aspect of, like right now I'm in Oregon. Actually, that my guitar player is walking down the street right now. He's going to see me. Hold on a second. Hey, brother.
Yep.
I'm just doing a Skype podcast on the phone, but I'm going to grab a coffee.
Nice.
How was your night?
Turned into an all-nighter, I guess.
Sweet.
It was cool.
All right, bro.
Let me know if you want to do any recording to me. Text me or something.
I will.
I'll be around.
I will. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
So that's Aaron Dugan. And Aaron, we went to college. We went to the New School together and started playing together. And he's been just like a huge force in my music. And in terms of like our approach to creating, you know, free music, like improvisational music. But like right now, for example, what we're doing is like, we're in a house and I have my 2.5-year-old here. And when I can break away, he's got all his pedals and stuff set up, and I have a microphone, and we basically just like play. Like, he'll just start playing and I start like beatboxing and singing and doing what I do. And we'll then go back and do like overdubs on it, and then we'll like sit and listen to those, and we'll find different like pieces of these like improvisational jams that we did, and go back like next week to New York with the band and build songs out of that. And so we'll take like a riff or a thing or an idea, and then we'll all start improvising around that idea, and then spend about a month doing that and forming songs, like tracks. And then I'll take those and I'll write lyrics to them, and create songs out of them, and then we'll go into the studio and record. So that's how I'm making this record, and that's it's sort of like a real band. It's like a band approach to it, versus like my last record, Akeda, was mainly made with my bass player Stu Brooks, who was creating tracks at home with, you know, musicians that we work with, and then we were then he would, you know, bring those to me, and I would just write to them, and then we would bring them into the studio and have a band play to them. This is more of a communal approach to making.
Totally, and your
band
sound has really changed since you started. How do you feel that progression has been? Because if you look at, you know, your early stuff versus your stuff now, it's, you know, it's really different.
Yeah, I mean, I think my music is kind of like just constantly been changing, because like I said, I'm just constantly listening to new music and evolving and sort of have a vision for the sound, and that vision kind of changes as time goes on, and just develops. So I feel like I'm working with the same elements that I was when I started. It's just that it's matured, it's developed, and I figured out, you know, how to sort of create what I want. And it's just, totally. I guess the main difference is it's a lot more dynamic. You know, it used to be that, like, I would write a song and it was a 3-minute song and it had really one emotion to the song. And it was an inspirational, sort of anthemic, feel good song about, like, overcoming your demons type of thing. And, you know, and I still, like, incorporated different things. I mean, the first record I made that I became known for that, you know, sold like a million copies was a live record. So basically, it was the live band, and it had rock solos and reggae bass lines and hip hop beats, and me sort of chanting with a reggae patois over it. But it still had like elements of improvisation, and it would go in different directions. And then basically I noticed as we would play live, like, the songs would speed up, and we would play the songs that we knew would get like a certain reaction that would keep the crowd moving. And I made like at a certain point, like, it just didn't feel authentic to me. It didn't feel like real life to me. And so it became more about like taking the fans and myself on this journey and just sort of like slowing songs down, having more like, more emotion in the song, allowing like the song to start in one emotion and end somewhere else, sort of like exploring different rooms in a house, kind of. And I always still have that same kind of like vision of like redemption in the music, but I don't start out with it. You know what I mean? I start out where I am and I allow for it to happen in the process.
Totally, and it's something you definitely get the effect of as a listener, is it really does. I don't know, there's certain albums I listen to and I feel like they take you someplace, and that's kind of what this stuff you guys put together is like.
Cool.
We have another listener question from Brett Becker, and Brett wants to know, is there anything that you guys have written as a band that has been something you thought maybe was too controversial that you just didn't want to publish?
I don't think I've done anything that I felt was too controversial. Let's see here. No, I mean, at this point, I'm like pretty real with like the music I make. And it's like what I make, what I'm feeling, what's going on in my life, I release it, you know. And I guess now what I'm trying to do is really not hold on to songs. Like, a lot of times, you know, you're writing and recording and kind of over a process of a year, 2 years, 3 years before the record comes out, and you save everything you've done because maybe the record company was going to want that to be the single, or maybe you want to save it for the record. And now what I've started doing is, like, just when I create a song, like, release it right away, because it's what I'm going through in the moment, and I don't want the fan base to be like 2-3 years behind me. You know what I mean?
No, totally. They're kind of like up to date with what you got going on.
Exactly, yeah. So it's basically like I'm living my life, and everyone is has access to that, you know what I mean, to where I'm at today, what's going on in my life today.
And how has your viewpoint on fame changed throughout your career? Because I think early on when you're really trying to make it, you know, you're really trying to get as much press as you can. But has that kind of changed for you with your career, how you viewed fame?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fame is a drug, and it's definitely a thing where, you know, you want to be known, you want to be successful, you want to make money, you want to have people respect you. That's just a human thing. And there was definitely a time for me at first where I ignored it, and it just, things happened for me. And then it was like, once I got a taste of it, I was chasing it, you know, for a while. And it was like, okay, you know, I really wanted to get to that next level. I wanted to get to that next step. And I think now I'm 37 years old, and I just became just, you know, this is sort of a common story with a lot of people, but I just basically became thankful for what I have. I'm thrilled that I get to make music and with the people I get to make music with and make a living out of doing that. And, you know, I stay open to opportunities, you know, but I don't chase them down like I try to live my life, you know?
No, totally. Well, I know you got to run, so we got some rapid-fire questions for you here. So are you ready?
I am ready. I'll try my best.
All right. Was there someone you leaned on as a mentor throughout your career?
Yeah, there was a guy, his name's Ephraim Rosenstein, and he wasn't really, there's been different people along the way. He was not a musician, but he's someone from within the religious community that was a very creative, unique individual, and really helped me really find myself when I needed help doing that, when I was getting lost in the career, in the music, in the religion, in all of it, you know.
Totally.
So I would say if I needed to choose one mentor, I would say that it was Ephraim.
Absolutely. What about the best piece of advice you've ever received?
The best advice I ever got was from my dad when I was going through my adolescence and just becoming like maybe 12, 13 years old. And it was simple, and it was just be yourself.
Yeah.
You know, don't try to impress people. Just be yourself.
What about one quote that's kind of been something you've really gone back to?
Well, the first thing that pops into mind is the Shema. That is the line in the Torah, you know, that we put in the mezuzahs, in the tefillin. It's like the central theme of Judaism, which is, listen, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. And it's really the main idea being the oneness of it, that that we're all connected, you know.
Totally. What about one book that's had a big effect on your life?
I guess there's a book called Politics of Experience by R.D. Lang. And as I just started getting into psychology, that book had a big impact on me. Yeah.
Well, I guess the question here would be, what's in your CD player right now? But I guess things have changed with iPods and everything else. But if we were to check out what song you're listening to right now, what would it be?
The record I've been listening to the most right now is for the Frank Ocean Blonde record. That's really what I've been listening to a lot. I listen to a lot of John Bellione with my kids. I do the carpool. I bring my kids to school, and I feel like that's like sort of, I think he described his music as like a mix between Dilla and Pixar, and
right.
I totally feel like that's such a good, it's just like good pop songs with good lyrics that's not corny, and it's just great ear candy. So I've listened to that a lot. I go to the Flume record a lot, the like latest Flume record. I really enjoy that. So, yeah.
Cool. If you got to give one piece of advice to an upcoming musician, you know, just getting their start, what would you tell them?
Upcoming musicians, I would just say develop your thing. Like, live your life. Try to live your life with as few crutches as possible. Just get in touch with the raw reality. Don't try to escape from things. And just listen to the music you love and just spend time with that, listening and living life and developing your craft. And because it has to come from within. So you can chase, you know, a fame or a success, but at the end of the day, it's all bullshit. And when you can create something, when you have the tool to be able to express your emotions and your take on the life, through creativity and through music, and you have the ability to do that. That tool is amazing. There's nothing, I wouldn't trade that in for anything, you know.
I love that, man. That's like super powerful, you know, really bring it into the creation of something, because that's the whole point we're trying to make on this show. I love it.
Yeah, and people forget that, like, all the time. You're like, how can I get discovered? How can I do this? It's like, don't worry about any of that. Like, that's like what I did. I just forgot about all that and just focused on me. Like, you know, I went into this yeshiva and I just studied Torah like 12 hours a day and lived in a basement, you know, and then it just happened. So, you know, that's been my experience. It might not be everyone's, but yeah.
Awesome. Well, last thing we have for you here is that people have very different definitions of success, but if you got to define it for yourself, what does it mean?
Success to me, it means being in touch with yourself, and being able to expand, to grow, in all areas of your life, and to live your life from the inside.
Totally. Well, if our listeners want to, like, check out what you got going on, where's the best place to, you know, either check you out or follow you?
Well, I would say I'm most active on Instagram. That's where I, like, do my, if I'm going to post something throughout the course of my day, that's usually where I do it. Modest Yahoo, Instagram, Facebook. I do like a lot of live Facebook feeds from shows and stuff. Like, so in terms of my music, that might be the best place. And then the website is modestyahooworld.com. Yeah, I got a new song out called Love Born and a new video, and that's all there on Facebook and Instagram and all that.
Awesome. Well, Modest Yahoo, thank you so much for being on the Create Your Own Life podcast today.
Yeah, man. My pleasure.